Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hello, this is Gladys, and if you're selling something, I ain't interested.
Hey, Gladys?
Hello.
Gladys, it's Ellen DeGeneres. I'm not selling anything.
Honey!
I
love it. Thank you for calling me.
Well, you're welcome. Did you see the show by any chance where I moved the plant for you?
Oh, honey, let me tell you. We got Austin, Texas, had a little bit of ice and two flakes of snow.
Oh, no.
And they shut the whole city down.
No. Oh.
And they didn't even, I'm telling you, the local news, they showed an icicle hanging off a fella's roof to his house. And that was the big news here in Austin, Texas.
Gladys.
Yes, ma'am.
So we'll get him to air that show. We'll also send you a copy of the tape. But I moved the plant that you were talking about so that I didn't look like alfalfa anymore.
Honey, I'll tell you, it was what a great thing to happen. And your plants are beautiful.
They
do a wonderful job. And I appreciate you moving it.
Sure. No, you had a good point. I don't want to look silly with the spiky things coming out. Is this the first time you've been on TV before?
No, honey. I've been on TV before. I was on the... Listen, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I love Jesus, but I drink a little.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If he's a Renaissance man, I'm a Madonna and child with eggplants. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And alongside the lovely Heather Fry. Wait a second.
Instead of...
You're not Heather Fry.
I forgot my red hair, the long red hair flowing, red locks.
Where's my producer?
Probably sick, rolling on some...
rolling?
Rolling in bed.
Going, oh, I'm so sick.
Rolling out of bed on the floor and then rolling on the floor.
Well, you talked to her yesterday. She was hacking and...
Our little Petrie.
Our little Petrie dish?
Our big Petrie.
Our big...
No, Petrie Herman.
No, her son is the Petrie dish. Okay. I don't understand. Now, I was just talking to Mike
she's
Sanders.
She's like Sigourney Weaver.
How so?
With the alien. I don't know.
With the little alien child, is that it?
that infests other
that sort of burst out
beings.
Of her belly, and now it infects everything around.
Which is why she's not in the office
today. Yeah, I was talking to Mike Sanders. Okay, and by the way, congratulations, Mike, on the big New Year special.
And the fan call this morning.
And you had a fan call just before my show started. And if you want to call back at 773-838-9278, you could hear him applauding on the other end saying, comedy burlesque is just democracy burlesque, rather.
Oh, wait, we have a call. We have a call.
So maybe he's calling in now. But 2 weeks in a row, Mike Sanders... And Our Town delivers with big-time production values, unlike my own show, which are small-time production values. Congratulations. Is that the fan?
Heather.
Oh, wait a second.
Get her on.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's go to line one and bring in my producer, who's not getting paid for today, Heather Fry. How are you? Wait. Sorry. Let's try it again, Heather.
But I'm used to not getting paid.
We'll pay you in flowers.
Okay.
What are you doing up at this hour?
I woke up coughing.
Oh.
Did you roll?
A little bit. A little hack and wheeze, yeah.
Did you duck and cover as well?
Not quite so much. It was more like involuntary sit-ups.
How do you keep in shape? I get sick and
exactly,
cough in bed.
Heather, you sound so sexy.
Don't I?
Oh, dear. I'll ask you.
This is actually an improvement from yesterday.
Let me ask you a question, okay?
Okay.
The same question I asked Sanders. Now, Mike Sanders has four kids.
Oh.
You have one. He's never sick. and
well, it's because the women who never get any sleep.
The men get to sleep. Does his wife ever get sick?
That's true. I'll need to ask him that.
Yeah.
I guess you got to get better so you can come back in here.
I will definitely be there next week. And
I think you're faking it.
Oh, I wish. I wish. I heard my voice yesterday. It was worse, and I heard it again today, and I was just like, oy, it was, thank goodness I'm only on the air once a week.
We realized that also because her mom works at the hospital, so she has the germs from the hospital, plus the son Petrie, the Petrie son dish.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, the Petrie son dish.
Yep. My son has the cold.
We'll start calling him Petrie instead
of. I didn't catch it off of him. I think my aunt got it, and I caught it off of her over the holiday season. Like, all the families in town were all hugging each other, and presto.
All right, this is why visiting the families over the holiday is really overrated.
One more reason you need to
not. It's really overrated.
Next year, I might just bunker down, like,
that's
hide
what
out
I'm
in the
thinking.
Basement for 2 weeks or something.
You know, you take your bottle of champagne, and you go into the basement.
My bunk bed's in the basement.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, that's okay. Now, drink plenty of hot tea and lemon and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah,
well,
honey.
Honey. You're in very capable hands with Miss Petruziak. She's fantastic. So
don't
you'll
say
be
that
all
until
good.
11:01.
And no yelling during the Bears game.
I will do my best, but I make you no promises.
They are already in the playoffs. They're already in, they got a bye for the first round.
I know. It's the Packers. I want to beat them.
Speaking of flowers, though, the Badgers, my alma mater, lost the Rose Bowl.
I don't even want to talk
TCU.
About the about New
oh,
Year's.
Oh, that's you? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that Michigan there?
I don't want to talk about any of those games. Oops. Oh, wait. I can't hear you. Something's wrong. I guess we got to say goodbye, Heather. Bye.
Oh, all five Big Ten team won. Yeah. I was happy to see TCU come through. Although, of course, like it seemed like none of the news stations actually knew what TCU stood for because they just kept saying TCU. It's Texas Christian University, but I feel like home of the Horned Frogs.
Yeah.
The Horned Frogs.
Look, let's move on to the other
okay,
stuff.
Mike. Hello?
Let's
I can't hear you.
Even, let us not even. No, yeah, I can't hear you either.
Okay.
Your mic
I'm
will
passing
go.
This over anyways.
All right. On the show today, welcome to the new year. Everybody, as Heather Fry mentioned, Leah Petruziak or Petruziak, as her grandmother would say, is filling in as producer today. We're answering questions we got at the end of last year, which means last week. I got a phone call, if you were listening to the show, from the guy on my left, Mr. Kaplan. And he's here in the studio, Dan Kaplan, with Frank Campisi, and we're going to talk about dahlias, of all things, in a second. And I don't ask me why.
Why not?
Okay, why not? That's the answer. Why not? And then another question that came up in the show last week was about red wiggler worms, and we were trying to figure out what happens to red wigglers in the winter. You know, those are the guys that are in your compost pile and in your vermicomposting if you have it indoors. Well, even outdoors you can have vermicomposting. But a lot of people do what they call vermicomposting, which is, you know, having worms break down your food, food scraps when you're done with them. But a lot of these guys are outdoors, the red wigglers. And we were trying to figure out, well, what happens to them? Well, I got a tweet, because we tweeted this last week, from Kathy, and that is, where's Kathy Nesbitt, who is, wait a Don't I have her? Boo, do, 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 do. Huh. I was going to have Kathy Nez. Boy, I can't believe I did that. Sometimes I'm working too fast on Saturday afternoon. It's Kathy Nesbitt, but she's... and worst, you know what happened here? I think what happened is... I think I did some rewriting and lost some of the crucial information. So, Kathleen, if you're listening to this and you think you want to drag yourself out of bed and go to the computer.
Here's her website, though.
Yeah. And that's the website, right. It's Kathy's Composters.
Kathy with a C.
Kathy with a C, C-A-T-H-Y, kathyscomposters.com. That's, you know, sometimes you just work fast, and then if you don't read it over, we need to put Kathy's name up there. And kathyscomposters.com, the name of the business, and put the link to it in the little segment that I've got on my this week's show. And we'll talk about Red Wigglers. And then later this week, and as you can see, the mayoral candidates are dropping like flies, which we all knew would happen. It would get down to three or four that were really going to do this. Representative Danny Davis dropped out the other day. And later this week, there's a group of environmental groups who were corralled by the Environmental Law and Policy Center, ELPC, and sat around at a table for a couple of meetings and wrote back and forth with emails. And I was part of this because I'm president, full disclaimer, of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, totally volunteer effort. The group came up with a bunch of questions that they would like to have answered by the mayoral candidates in the city of Chicago. And there's about 20 of them, and I put some of them up on the website, and we'll talk about some of these. I'll give you an idea of what they're going to be, because there's a lot of issues in the mayoral election, obviously. There's crime, there's education, there's the budget, and everything is affected by the budget. But, of course, as we talked about on this show several months ago, Mayor Daley was an environmental mayor. And even if he missed a few things, he did a lot of things right. And the question is, will these things be continued and will they be improved upon? And so that's why the Green Platform Questionnaire is going out to the mayoral candidates. And we'll talk more about that. But what I would say right now is that if you believe in these issues, urge your candidate, your favorite candidate, urge all of them to answer the questions. So it's all part of who you vote for and why you vote for them. And we'll talk about that later in the show. So let's go back to the guys sitting next to me, Dan Kaplan, as I mentioned, and he's the vice president of the Central States Dahlia Society. How you doing, Dan?
Great, Mike.
And Frank, pull that microphone over there, Frank, and talk right into it. It's Frank Campisi, and he's a member of the Central States Dahlia Society and a guy who propagates how many dahlias a year?
About 700. I grow 100 for myself. I don't sell dahlias, but I have a good 600 that I give away to people that identify as gardeners and that I feel will take care of them and to spread the love of growing dahlias.
And it is quite that, you know, there's orchid people, there are daylily people, there are bonsai people, and there are dahlia people. And dahlia people... You guys are nuts, by the way. You realize that?
Just weird.
and the reason I'm talking about this is I got a phone call at the end of last week's show from a guy named Samuel. And Samuel, you're welcome to call if you want, because the first good thing that Samuel did is he told me he had just seen this article in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, the January-February issue. And of course, they're a great advertiser on my show, and I write for the magazine. And I had seen the article as well. I hadn't had a chance to read it carefully, which I did this past week. And it's all about getting your dahlia started early. But it had this system that you guys use to get cuttings. Now,
right.
Dahlias, most people, if they grow dahlias, know that they have tubers. And in the fall, when the plant breaks down and the foliage collapses, you dig up the tuber and you store it in over the winter, and then you replant it in the spring. But that's only going to get you so many dahlias, right? It's going to get you one. It's going to get you the one. Can't you break them apart and get more than one plant?
You can, but that's an extra step that you have to take. If you're just gonna be lazy about it and just want to put that tuber in, you'll get one. But you may get a few more if you get multiple eyes. But what'll happen is you'll wind up with a bush rather than a single plant.
Ah.
And that'll diminish the size of the flower because too much of the energy is going into multiple blooms at the beginning and stems rather than just the one.
Yeah, and of course, you guys aren't satisfied with having a dahlia the size of your fist. It's got to be the size of your head or even Heather Fry's head or something.
With hair.
With hair.
Yeah,
exactly.
They'll get up to about 16, 18 inches, some of them.
They're huge.
Yeah.
And that seems to... Now you were telling me in the green room all about the origin of dahlias and how this got started, Dan. It's
yeah.
pretty fascinating.
Originally, the dahlias are a cool weather flower, generally, and they don't do well, therefore, in like Florida, Arizona, far southern California, where the temperatures really get too hot. They came from the highlands of Mexico several hundred years ago, were brought to Europe, France, sometimes in London, and they were then propagated there, developed. And from that start, which looked like about a 1.5-inch, 8-petal daisy-type flower, you now get over 25,000 different varieties of dahlias. So,
I got to ask you. I'll ask both of you, Frank and Dan. Do we really need 25,000 varieties of dahlia? And you say dahlia, and some people say dahlia, and some people say dahlia. Whatever. I'm a dahlia guy.
And if you're from Canada, you say dahlia.
Dahlia.
Dahlia Lama.
Yeah, Dahlia Lama. Right.
Yeah. Now there's a list of dahlias that we call the Wonderful 50, and that's what we concentrate on, is the Fabulous 50. And these are hybrid exhibition caliber dahlias that's primarily what I grow. I don't grow any handoffs. In fact,
you don't mess around at all with the inferior stuff,
the,
huh?
The dahlias, my stock from last year, I will pitch about 25% of it because it didn't measure up to the caliber of dahlias that are exhibition caliber.
So when you say that, Frank, you mean at the end of the season or maybe even during the growing season, if you see that the plant is not performing the way you want, do you chuck it?
Pitch it,
baby.
Compost.
If I give it
Red Wigglers need some food.
If I give that stock to someone, it might come back to me, and I don't want that.
It goes in a big circle, and it ends up back in your yard then, right?
All right. Another thing I want to make is that dahlia growing is known as the fall flower, the September flower.
Yeah.
But by propagating our dahlias from our tubers from the previous year, we can take a division and allow it to sprout under fluorescent tubers, just ordinary fluorescent tubers.
Mm-hmm.
And
which are not to be confused with the tubers of the dahlias themselves, but you're talking about the fluorescent lights. Yeah. Shop lights, basically.
Right. Actually, yes, shop lights, exactly. All right, and we can multiply our stock. So from a division, say a quarter clump of a dahlia, I won't have any trouble at all making 15 to 20 plants out of that. And those will be all exhibition caliber hybrid dahlias. So we multiply our stock, and that's as much fun multiplying our stock with hybrid dahlias as it is growing dahlias.
All right, but you talk about the top 50, you know, and that you're interested in, but do you do you like to venture out and find new stuff as well?
Oh, and as we find new stuff, it's added to the fabulous 50.
Then it would be more than 50. It would be 51. or do you replace the fabulous 50?
The fabulous 50, what that really means is it's not 50 different dahlias necessarily. It could be 150 different ones. It's those dahlias that have received 50 awards throughout the country.
Well, why didn't you say so?
I just did.
Okay, now I get it. Okay, that's great.
But as just a quick follow-up to it, if people want to really know something about what the dahlias look like and what kind to grow, let me just put in a quick plug for our Central States Dahlia Society. Our annual show in the fourth weekend of September is at the Chicago Botanic Garden. If you attend that show, you will see literally hundreds of different prize-winning dahlias, and then you can select based on what you see by their name. You can make a determination as to which ones you would like to grow next year, and we offer many of those at our plant sale in May at the Botanic Garden.
So you got the plant sale in May. The show is in
September.
I have to admit, Dan, I went online looking for a website. Do you guys have?
No, we did. We did.
Dan, and
we're reconstructing. Maybe you can help us, Mike.
I got all this spare time.
Right. We're in the process of reconstructing it. We do have an email address that if anybody would like to take it down, it's Central States Dahlia Society, one word, @gmail.com.
Okay, Central States
Dahlia Society @gmail.com. If anybody will write to that email address, I will personally respond with whatever the answer is to your question.
You just got yourself in trouble because there's at least, 14, 15 people listening to the show, and you're going to be flooded.
That many?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And they will they will write you night and day.
That's fine. That's fine.
By the way, that is Dan Kaplan, who is the vice president of the Central States Dahlia Society, which does not have a website, but they do have a Gmail account, so and they're working on it. And Frank Campisi is also here in the studio. We, actually, the three of us encountered each other several years ago, back when I was working at Gargantua Radio down the dial. So it's a reunion here.
Yes.
On the south side. Notice the opulent studios. I know you appreciate it.
Lovely.
That. Yes. Now, I want to get to growing dahlias, and especially because this all started with Samuel calling me last week about how do you do this. And Frank just talked about how you can take cuttings and you start rooting them, and then by the end of May, when it's time to put the dahlias outside, you've got plants that are already that have a head start on the tubers, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. What we do is we take cuttings from our tubers, okay? And that starts about Valentine's Day. We take our cuttings.
So it's a little early now. Early. Do tubers need a rest period? Do they need
yes.
to? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
They do need a winter cooling off period.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what you can do is you can dig your dahlias. Put them in the refrigerator for a week. They'll think it's winter time. Take them out of the refrigerator, put them under fluorescent lights, and they'll start sprouting.
But that's not enough time, right?
Well, that's enough time to get them to think that they've been through a winter period,
uh-huh.
and they'll start sprouting, and then you can start taking cuttings.
I imagine people go to your house, Frank, and it's filled with dahlias, and there's no room for the milk, in the refrigerator.
Well, I got a big house.
How many refrigerators is what I want to know.
Another thing I want to make is that dahlias are known as the September flower, the fall flower.
Right.
But by taking cuttings and starting our tubers under fluorescent lights, we start them in a product called Oasis, and
which you have given me here. I got
yes, yes. We start them in oases, and they develop a root system. And we have our dahlias when they go in the ground about the 1st of June. They're already about 12 inches high in a 4-inch pot with a root system. So we have our dahlias, the fall flower, beginning to bloom in July, August, September, October. In other words, we have taken the fall flower, the dahlia, the fall flower, and we've made it the all-summer flower.
But, okay, now that's where I got to stop you, because Dan just pointed out a little while ago that it likes cool weather. Does it perform as well in the heat of summer as it does in September?
It performs better in the fall because the sun is not so as bright, and the colors hold better in cool weather. That's why dahlias grow so well, like in Canada.
And in the mountains of Mexico.
Yeah, but those are little ones. You don't want those.
Yeah.
You guys, you know, bigger is not necessarily better, as they say, except with dahlia
growers. It is in Chicago.
It is. Okay. Now, what's, what, yeah, I want to talk about the oasis here. One of the things is florists use oasis, but it's a different kind of oasis. I know you're waving your hand going, no,
yes,
I understand.
Yes, yes.
But it is called oasis, I believe. But yours is a special rooting medium.
Well, the difference is what you're talking about, Mike, for the florist is the floral foam.
Right. Okay,
that's the substance that's compressed that will hold stems of flowers and twigs and things where people are making arrangements with their flowers, and not to be confused with the oasis wedges, which is a growing medium that is produced to be similar in cell structure to that of the plant, and those are used for propagation. Not only that we use them for the dahlias, but they're used primarily for the poinsettias that are, you know, the millions that are grown, geraniums, etc. All of those woody type stem plants that need to be produced from vegetative propagation can be used with the wedges. And what happens then is, as opposed to using seeds, when you use a cutting, you retain the DNA of the original plant.
That's a really good point.
And then you know what you're going to get. If you put 100 seeds of dahlias, you know, the hybrid dahlias in your garden and grow them, you might be lucky to get one plant, one flower that looks decent.
It's the same as apples. You know, if you throw apple seeds on the ground, you're not necessarily going to get the parent plant. In fact, you probably won't. And the same thing with dahlias. So that's why you dig up the tubers and replant those, because then you get the same plant. But the cuttings will do the same thing. And right. What you do, and if you read the article in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine
Michelle Walsh.
Michelle. I was thinking Jane.
Oh,
no,
Michelle.
It's not Jane Burton. It's Michelle Burton Walsh.
The other one.
Michelle. And she's a good friend of mine. Like, I can't, not anymore, I suppose.
Nah, she'll be all right.
But Michelle writes about this and shows you the diagram of how you take this medium. Now, where do you get the oasis?
That is an interesting question. And
you got to grow it.
And if I could find somebody who might be interested in joining with me, we might be able to make a lot of money. The problem with it, Mike, is that they're produced by the Smithers Company in Ohio that makes these oasis wedges and other floral type products. What they do, though, is they don't make them for retail consumption. That you have to buy these strips. You buy these strips that have 10 little wedges.
How many strips do you have to buy?
You buy a case of them, and they're 280 strips to a case. Now, the average person, maybe you might want a mic, but the average person doesn't need 280.
Frank does, because he's got 700, 800, you know.
Yeah, but you still got 2,800 wedges when you buy a case.
Oh, my goodness.
So what we do for our members and others, which works out real well, is we'll buy some case goods and bring them to our meeting, and then we can redistribute them back to our members at our cost So if they only need five strips or two strips, that would be great. And for anybody listening, if you are interested, we have a meeting next Sunday at the Elk Grove Village Library. We're going to talk about honeybees, but nevertheless, I will also be bringing some of these wedges to that meeting. So if anybody, even though you're not a member, if you'd like to come.
I'm warning you, 15 people are going to show up from listening to this show.
And bring your friends.
And you have all these extra strips anyway. Listen, I need to take care of some business. You guys hang on, all right? And we're talking. Oh, and I should let our audience know that Rick DeMille's not here today.
Oh, dang.
They worked him to death figuratively at the Fox News Chicago this week. And they had him on the morning show. I talked to him the other day. He says, I'm working 4 hours, 5 hours every day at the, which is a lot for a meteorologist, I guess. And so he's taking the day off. He's not even in town. He got out of Dodge. But I've got a forecast for you coming up in just a second. But first of all, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Did you know that this is prime time for tree inspection? In winter, it's easier to spot some problems like weak branch attachments or insect damage not as visible through dense foliage during the growing season, especially now that the early snow has disappeared. If your trees have cables and braces in them, the hardware should be inspected every few years to be sure it's intact, in serviceable condition, or in need of adjustment or replacement. With leaves gone, your arborist has a clear view of the tree's cable and bracing work. And winter pruning, when sap is not running, can help prevent the spread of certain diseases. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
We're entering a new year, so this is a good time to look back at the work of some of the green service providers of the past year. Well, one in particular, WRD Environmental. Now, you've heard me talk about their involvement in green activities like Greentown, the future of community at the College of Lake County in Grays Lake, Illinois. That was last March. Then they sponsored the 6th annual Chicago River Summit in June, hosted by Friends of the Chicago River and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Speaking of the river, WRD Environmental has been instrumental in developing and maintaining the award-winning and innovative Fish Hotel in the Chicago River for 2 years. And that's not all. WRD Environmental was part of the South Pond Rehabilitation Team, which transformed that part of Lincoln Park from a tired, polluted mud hole into a vibrant showplace for a rebounding ecosystem. And WRD was one of the main sponsors for Mayor Daley's Landscape Award Ceremony, which celebrates gardening all over the city. That's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to WRD. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old exile? For all anxiety, my dear, for all anxiety. not end days of old lang syne.
Just one more tribute to the new year. I had to play that one because that's my favorite arrangement of that. That's the Beach Boys. Best arrangement of Auld Lang Syne ever. Let me give you a quick forecast here. Like I said, Rick DeMille taking the day off. He'll be back next week.
You know, he's a Madison alumnus.
I know.
I think he just got wasted last night after No.
He's probably not too happy about it. I told you, I don't want to talk about yesterday.
Sorry.
In my opinion, yesterday never happened. Okay. It never happened. All right? That day has been erased from the books. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-20s. The lowest wind chill readings will be 0 to 5. That's this morning, probably already above those. Southwest winds 10 to 15 tonight, partly cloudy. A few flurries after midnight. Lows are 15 to 19, except in the lower 20s downtown, where, you can keep those dahlias going an extra month. Southwest winds 10 to 15. I'll tell you, it really does make a difference whether you're in the suburbs or the city in terms of the temperatures.
Well, lake effect,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Monday, partly sunny, highs in the lower 30s. Monday night, mostly cloudy with 30% chance of light snow, low around 20. Partly cloudy on Tuesday, high in the mid-20s. It's kind of the same as we go on this week. Not much going on. It's the high 20s, lower 30s. The occasional dusting of snow, and so kind of uneventful, which is okay with me. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In the studio, I've got Dan Kaplan and Frank Campisi, and because of a phone call we had last week, we're talking about how to get your dahlia started, and you don't do it till around Valentine's Day,
yeah,
right?
Middle of February.
Yeah, middle of February.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure people understand. The right medium is this Oasis. If you want to get that, you want to give Dan send him an email at centralstatesdahliasociety@gmail.com. If you don't remember that, if you're driving, you can't write it down, just write to me and I'll pass that information along to you.
Nice.
And that will give you the wedges that they come in a plastic container with how many are in this?
Ten.
And each strip, and they're, you know, the strip's like an inch and a half wide, and the whole thing is maybe
2 inches deep.
It's two inches deep, and it's not very big. And then you know, what do you do? Is you got to get your tuber started, right? You have to get them to start producing vegetation.
Right.
How do you do that?
Here, our club will provide wedges to our members. Or people who come to us.
You're right. And you've got a meeting. When's that meeting?
And we will take you step by step.
Ah, okay.
On how to propagate your dahlias and how to multiply your dahlias. And before long, you'll have enough dahlias, hybrid dahlias, exhibition caliber dahlias for yourself, for your neighbors.
I'm trying to get one the size of a truck wheel. Can we do that?
Yeah.
For your club, and our club uses these to support our club. We have members. A good example is Dr. David Sales. He grows propagates 400. Dahlia cuttings. Each year, he grows 50 dahlias, but he'll propagate 400 and give 350 away to his friends that identify as gardeners, doctors, nurses, people who identify as gardeners and want to take some experience in growing these beautiful, fantastic.
Well, I
want
to get to doing that, but give me where the meeting is again.
The meeting is this next Sunday on the 9th at the Elk Grove Village Public Library. It's right off of Arlington Heights Road and Beesterfield. and it's at 1:30. Library opens at 1 o'clock. We get there. We try and get there about 1, but the meeting starts at 1:30.
Okay.
And like I said, Mike, if anybody, even though they're not members, you're welcome to come. We're going to talk about this. Laura Anderson, mm-hmm. the bee expert, is going to be there, but Frank and I will also be there, and I'll have some wedges if anybody's interested, and we can show you how to use them.
You know? So you're going to give people wedgies.
We'll give them a wedge. You got it.
Thank you.
How many different varieties do you guys grow? Sorry.
Yeah, no. Well.
Oh, the varieties of dahlias?
Yeah, how many have you grown of the 25,000?
I've probably grown a total of about 100 over time, not at one time. But
and you grow 100 each year in your yard, Frank, right?
Yeah, but of the 100, I'll probably grow about 40 varieties. And this year I'm going to narrow it down some and just grow the absolutely outstanding variety.
You are so picky, Frank. You are so picky. You know,
we learned this from the English people. The English people are our teachers,
and they're really picky.
They are very, very particular about their gardening. They love dahlia growing, and they set the pace for us.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciate.
You're just trying to keep up with the Joneses, aren't you? Yeah.
Perfection in dahlias, not size. Perfection. Well, perfection and
size
color.
Seems to be a big deal, though, well, you know? And I want to point out something on my website, MikeNovak.net. If you go to this week's show, you're going to see pictures of dahlias in there. And there's another guy in the area who propagates dahlias, Steve Megos.
Very good friend.
Yeah, and you guys all know each other. And right. I interviewed him several years ago for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine and went to visit his yard, and of course, covered in dahlias. He gave me a tuber. And that's the second picture in there. And what you're going to see is this tuber produced a flower that was split in half. Half of it was a solid color, and half of it was variegated. Now, for you guys doing shows, you look at that and say, that's going to the compost pile. Me, as I say, how cool is that? I loved that plant. That was just... Now, why did it do that, Dan?
What happens to the DNA in these plants are such that you've got to remember that the plants are formed by mating of two parents together to create something new. And what happens with dahlias, not all the time, but quite often, they want to revert back to one of the parents. So you may grow a dahlia from these cuttings that for several years that looks like it's producing, you know, almost a clone of what you anticipated it would be, and then all of a sudden you get one, like you said, Mike, that's half red and half white.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, wow, what happened? Well, that's what happened. It lost some of the DNA, changed, and one overtook the other, and it produces a different color. Sometimes it might produce a new plant, a new flower that really is beautiful, and what will happen is then you can try and continue to propagate that tuber over the next few years, and you may wind up with a new introduction of a dahlia that turned out to be, you know, something really spectacular from something that was totally different 3-4 years before.
And that's, you know, one of the great things about it. You don't always know what you're going to get.
Yeah, but you're pretty assured when you do what Frank was talking about as far as the cuttings.
That you will get it true to the flower that grew
99% of the time, you know what you're going to get. When you plant seeds, forget it. You're wasting your time.
All right, we've got a question on line one, and that's J.R. How you doing, J.R.?
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. You got a question for our dahlia growers here.
Yeah, I'm understanding the propagation end of it, but then once it gets to a point for transplant and getting them into the garden or into some larger containers, what kind of soil mixes are you recommending?
See, that's a great question because that's going to lead me to the question that I had for them next, too. But who wants to grab?
Okay, here. In our club, every second Tuesday, throughout the summer, we have a garden walk, and we go to a different garden, dahlia garden, basically a dahlia garden, but they could grow anything they want. But we have a garden walk every second Tuesday at 7 o'clock, and you visit several different dahlia gardens in the metropolitan area, And every one of them is different. And from going to these different gardens, you will pick up tips on how to grow dahlias. And in no time, you'll find yourself as a accomplished dahlia grower. Now, as a gardener, treat yourself to growing some hybrid exhibition dahlias.
You've made that point already, but the question that JR is asking is, what kind of soil are you using here?
Yeah. What you need to do, it depends. When you start out, the best thing to do as far as for the propagation process, once you've gone through the process of rooting the dahlia cutting in the wedge, and now it's produced a root system within about 2 or 3 weeks after you put it into the wedge, what you need to do then is put it into a little, like a 4-inch round pot or a little 4-inch square pot. It doesn't make any difference, with a soilless mix. Don't go dig some soil from your garden. That will not work. Go buy a sterilized mix and use that. And then once that little wedge is in that pot and it's growing out and you got a nice plant, all you have to do is remove the whole plant. The wedge and all stay together and are plopped into your garden in the summer when there's no more chance of frost, usually around the middle of May to the 1st of June.
Yeah, so, JR, what people use, in the business they call it soilless mix, but often you don't even see that on the bag, but they call it potting mix. And the idea is that it's made from peat and perlite and those kinds of things. It doesn't use the real soil, and it's sterilized. Then the question I would ask, and I hope, JR, you're traveling down this road with me, once you put it in the garden, what kind of soil do you want in the garden? Because you're going to put it in soil.
Right. I guess what I'm questioning is that, it sounds like you guys are very, very set on the dahlias. Is there a lot of these people, they're set up with dahlia gardens. We deal with vegetable gardens, rose gardens. It's a dahlia, preparing it, having somebody, dig it up. I mean, and putting in the other organics, other topsoil. I'm sure that, I don't know. Or is the
Are you putting in compost? Is that a good medium to add to the soil?
Well, what I would ask JR is this. If you've ever grown a tomato plant, you can grow a dahlia in the same spot because the requirements are almost identical as far as the good quality of the compost in the soil, 6 to 8 hours of sun. You need a certain amount of water, fertilizer. You need a cage usually to support the plant, whereas you need a stake to support the dahlia. It's almost identical in the process. Your product and result is a lot different, but the method that you use is similar. So anybody that's grown, tomatoes and peppers, anything in that particular soil, a dahlia will do fine.
Then it would be like I said, you want to get some compost and you want to mix it in with the soil. You want to have good drainage, obviously.
Below.
Yeah, you want to, because you don't want the tuber to be sitting in wet soil, right?
That's
exactly
correct.
Mike. My theory is that as a gardener, you are capable of growing very nice tomato plants. Okay, tomatoes. Now, if you can grow good tomato plants, you will have no problem growing outstanding dahlias.
There's an echo in here.
And as a gardener, treat yourself to growing some exhibition dahlias, because as a gardener, you expect to be rewarded. And nothing will reward you more than growing exhibition dahlias, and they're as easy to grow as tomato plants.
Well, you might be rewarded by eating tomatoes.
Right.
So,
don't know how to eat a dahlia, though.
JR, does that help?
It does, Mike. It does. I appreciate it. And like I say, just a good preparation, like any
exactly.
Good vegetable
garden. Nutrients. And before I let the two of you go, and JR, hang on, because this is one other thing I wanted to ask. Because when I went to Steve Megos's garden and he was growing championship dahlias, he was fertilizing them within an inch of their lives, and spraying, and really, it wasn't the most organic treatment I've ever seen. In fact, it was about the least organic treatment I've ever seen. Can you grow a decent dahlia without going through all, you know, jumping through those hoops of fires and using up all the chemicals?
A very simple answer is yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, but if you want
treat them as a tomato plant, you grow very good.
But if
dahlias.
You right. But if you want dahlias on steroids and to be 16 inches in diameter, then you follow the Megas procedure.
Right. Exactly. So JR, there's the idea. You can grow them. They're going to be perfectly lovely. If you want to grow them the size of your house, then you got to get them on steroids. But it sounds like with just some basic fertilizing and great soil and compost, you're going to grow a really good dahlia.
No problem.
All right. Thanks for calling, buddy. What?
We'll talk to you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for dropping by here today. And I learned more about dahlias than I knew before.
Wanted to know. Than
I wasn't going to go down that road.
No.
That was,
for parade floats? That's what I want to know.
Yes. Leah wants to know if they use them for parade floats.
Yeah. You can. The only problem with the dahlias, as far as why you normally don't see them in the florist shops when you go in to buy flowers, is that they're hard to transport. You know, they're so big, especially the larger ones, and they don't hold up for but a few days, whereas a rose, a chrysanthemum, they will last for quite a long time. Dahlias do not. So if you buy one, you want to take it in and display it for a few days, and that's it.
All right, gentlemen, Dan Kaplan and Frank Campisi, good luck getting started on your dahlias, which will be in about a month and a half,
and you
keep me posted on what's going on, all
Thank
right?
Thank you, Mike.
And if anybody wants information on their meeting next week, just send me an email or the contact for Dan, which is centralstatesdahliasociety@gmail.com. But if you forget, write to me, and I'll tell you what it is. Now that Christmas and New Year have come and gone, it's time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks you've neglected, such as repotting the unruly houseplants that were temporarily shoved behind the bookcase when you made room for the Christmas tree. SIDS greenhouses can help with the right soil mixes, what we call soilless mixes, and fertilizers for every plant, and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Remember, houseplants not only look great, they also help improve indoor air quality. If you've been enjoying a lovely poinsettia or poinsettia, or how I like to pronounce it, poinsettia, for the last several weeks, you're in luck. Now through February 1st, you can trade in your poinsettia plant at SIDS and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. Oh, and just in case you're already working on this year's Christmas, and if you are, you need help. Most remaining Christmas merchandise is 60 to 75% off while supplies last. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You know, Dan's already, he's saying, we didn't get quite all the information. You know what, Dan, you know what's going to happen? They're going to show up, and as Frank said, you guys will teach them everything they know. So,
absolutely.
You know, there's only so much you can do on the radio. It's okay. It's okay.
Emails, Dan,
it's really okay.
Brasil, abre a cortina do passado, tira a mãe preta do cerrado. Bota o rei Congo no congado, Brasil, Brasil.
It never ends here. The conversation just came. What was the confusion? Was
no, the big thing was that caller last week got stimulus.
Yeah.
He was thinking about the Oasis Floral Falls.
Yes, and that was, you know, that's a really good point. Oasis floral foam is different from the Oasis stuff used for propagation. Whew. All right.
Phew.
My head hurts. it's the Mike Novak Show. What was that?
Do we talk too much, Mike?
No, not at all, Frank. You guys are great. They're going to be gone in just a second, and we're going to wave them goodbye. But I'm going to wave you goodbye as we get into the news and let you know that in the second hour of the show, we'll be talking about some of those red wiggler worms and what happens to them in the winter. We know what happens to dahlias. You put them in the refrigerator and they think it's winter. We figured that out. But for the red wigglers, what happens when they're in the compost pile? And we're going to have Kathy Nesbitt from Kathy'sComposters.com. I'm also going to be talking about the mayoral candidates for the city of Chicago and the environment and some of the questions that are going to be asked of those candidates as we move along in the election. And we have fewer and fewer candidates, but these questions, as I mentioned before, are important. And there's a list of them that's going to come out this week on Thursday. I've got some of those. I got the scoop here in advance. So you will see what kinds of questions should be answered by the next person who is going to be mayor of the city of Chicago. That's all coming up in the 10 o'clock hour of the Mike Novak Show. Heather Fry, not here. Leah Petrusiak is. So am I. Talk to you next hour.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
This is Dahlia theme music. I don't know if you realize that.
Indiana Jones and the Last Dahlia.
Wow. You know, love those guys. Dan and Frank, they would still be here telling us how to propagate stuff if...
they should have their own Dahlia
radio show. I think they got to have Dahlia Talk.
Dahlia Talk.
I think that's next. I think Dahlia Talk.
Dahlia Talk with Frank and Dan.
Except you got to say, there. That's it. Except it's Dahlia Talk.
Dahlia
Talk.
Dahlia.
Frank and Dan.
You can also email him at Dahlia Dan.
Awesome. You know, that's what he should do. Check. He should just be Dahlia Dan.
And fill out Frank the Frank Flower.
You know, now I'm kind of afraid to start talking about red wigglers. I mean, this is like a real gardening show today. We'll get to the environmental stuff.
I actually have some real questions for Kathy, too. I'm very excited about my question.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You've been researching?
Well, I have a friend who does worm composting, and so she was always saving her scraps, like her peels and cores and stuff. And so what I started doing, I started saving a big bag of it in my fridge. And, of course, it was there for a while, and then it started molding. And I was like, oh, is it molding? Like, can she not feed it to the worms now because it's moldy?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, maybe we should just go to line one and
bring in
Kathy Nesbitt. How you doing, Kathy?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
And, of course, she's and I can't believe I left out I don't know what happened. I'm looking at the website. I didn't put I put the link to your newsletter, but I didn't put the link to your business, which is Kathy'sComposters.com. That's CathysComposters.com. It'll be up there by as soon as I get off the show. I'll go back up and post that stuff. I was just working too fast. Yes, you know, I think I got distracted by Michigan getting pummeled in whatever bowl game they are.
I thought we weren't talking about it.
I know. You know, I'm
worms, Mike. Worms.
Would you go online and see if Rich Rodriguez has been fired yet? I'm just really, really.
Sorry, Kathy. I need to navigate away from your page to go see that.
No,
I'm just kidding.
It's all right.
No, stay with the worms.
The worms are calling you.
There should be a football team called the Red Wigglers.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
They are superheroes.
They are. Well, you know what? You know what I like on your page. Scroll down a little bit there, because I don't have it on my website at the moment. Keep going.
Worm Away newsletter. I like
keep
that.
Keep going. This is what I like. Ask us about worms without borders.
Don't you love that? It has to do with Michigan.
It does.
It does.
Yes.
How well, I grew up in Detroit, you know, just
Detroit
across the bridge from. When you're from Detroit, you get to say Detroit, all right? If you're not from Detroit, you have to say Detroit.
An international forum for students from Canada and the USA to share experiences relating to vermicomposting or worm composting in the classroom. That's neat.
So what are you doing with that? Because you're based in Ontario.
Correct, yes. Well, because of an article in BioCycle, I was contacted by Urban Options in Lansing, and they wanted to know about my school program, so we went down and met with some of the teachers down there, and it's an online forum for students to share experiences of worms in the class. Michigan is one of the leaders, actually, because of Mary Appelhoff, and she wrote a book called Worms Eat My Garbage.
Which is sort of the classic, and it kind of got the whole thing rolling.
That's the Bible, since it's Sunday morning.
Right.
Yes.
Worms Eat My Garbage, and many, many people have heard about that, and many people have the book. So where have we come since Worms Eat My Garbage?
Well, worms are really getting into people's kitchens. Thank God for Mary.
You know how what that sounds like? Worms are getting into people's kitchens. It's like we want to reach for the raid is what people will do.
Sadly, but it's changing, Mike. I think that people really are understanding that worms are the solution for part of our garbage crisis. Hmm. And so it's waste management and soil production. The worms, of course, convert the food scraps and paper into mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. I forget
usable.
About paper, because I was going to say food scraps just naturally would break down, but a lot of paper, they help.
Well, we're going to get the straight skinny here from Kathy Nesbitt. And by the way, if you're interested in vermicomposting, if you wanted to try it, this is a great New Year's resolution. Get the kit. Get your kids involved. 773-838-9278 if you want to call and ask a question. We'd be happy to take your call. Because this all started with a question last week, which we might as well get to right away. And it was a person who called and wanted to know about, well, what happens to red wigglers in the winter. You've got an outdoor compost pile, and it might be on the ground. It might be in a container. What's going on in the winter, Kathy, with the red wiggler? And I figure you should know because you're from Ontario, for crying out loud.
Although it's warmer in Ontario today than it is in Chicago.
I'm not surprised. Nothing surprises me anymore about our climate and the weather.
We had you beat yesterday.
Did you? Okay.
Well, no, it was not yesterday.
Oh, New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve was over 50 degrees here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, and what happened, of course, which is something else that affects things like compost piles, when you have snow, and plants, when you have snow cover, it's a mulch. And it's protecting your plants. Then what happened is, of course, all the snow melted, and then it freezes. Mm. And that makes things a little harder on plants, and I would imagine red wigglers, too.
Yes. Now, what happens to the worms in the winter is the red wigglers are not soil dwellers, so they live in organic matter, the compost pile, manure piles, rotting stuff, that's where they live. And in the winter, as long as they'll go dormant, so they actually hibernate in the winter, they tie themselves in a knot.
I beg your pardon.
And hope that it warms up soon. And so in the summer, they actually estivate if it's too dry, if we're having a drought.
I used to estivate, but I pulled some muscles.
You have to become more worm-like.
Yeah, more. Well, yeah, I am already. So they do have a way that they protect themselves from the cold, and you're saying that they sort of hunker down, tie themselves in knots just to keep the body heat?
It's the last-ditch effort at survival. Worms have 5 hearts each,
wow.
And I believe that the hearts have something to do with keeping the flow going during the winter.
So all worms have 5 hearts or just certain kinds of worms?
The earthworms, all earthworms.
Okay, now...
Are they spread throughout the body, or are they all in one place?
They're all in... It's sort of one organ.
Okay.
Yeah, yes.
You know, I thought one of the funniest things that I read on your website, Kathy, was what happens when you chop a worm in half.
Stop it.
And it was you get a... two halves of a dead worm, basically.
I can't multiply worms.
It's a lot of people think, oh, don't worry, if you cut off its head, it'll just regrow. But that's a myth.
That is a myth. That's an urban myth. And I do a lot of presentation at schools, and that comes up almost every time I present. You know, did you know you could cut a worm in half and have two worms? And so it's fascinating.
Well, you know what it is? It's a way of assuaging our guilt. For those of us who are gardeners, we're chopping worms up all the time. Every time you dig, go, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't really mean to do that. Please. Oh, well, don't worry. It'll regenerate. Well, no, it won't.
Actually, though, they're segmented creatures. They have the lines on them. So if a couple of segments get cut off the tail by accident when you're gardening, that piece will decompose. But then those three segments or whatever will grow back.
As long as you don't split their five hearts into a zillion pieces. Oh, my goodness.
Yes,
So part of the Worms Without Borders is you obviously going into a lot of classrooms, too. Are you? And then you also go into classrooms where they're already doing worm composting, too?
I go into some that have worms already, although it's sort of... I feel that, again, back to Michigan, that Michigan is the leader because of Mary's fabulous work. Mm-hmm. We need to do something in Canada because our landfill closed where Toronto used to put their garbage. And I don't know if you're aware, but we started shipping garbage to Michigan.
Oh, how nice.
I know, how generous.
Thank you, Canada.
Shame on us for shipping our garbage.
Really?
The country.
Well, shame on us for accepting it is what I say.
Yeah, why would you accept our garbage for cash?
For cash, that's right.
Because we're desperate.
Right? So I know your next segment is about the Green Initiative. So, yeah, the people need to ask the mayoral candidate, what are they doing? I know you're looking at recycling, so if you're not even looking at organic matter yet, yikes.
Well, that's a really good point, and I do want to get back to Red Wigglers in the winter, but let's go there for I've still got questions for you, and that's Kathy Nesbitt from kathyscomposters.com, and it's Kathy with a C. You're right. Part of what has not been fully understood for too long is that about a third of our waste is organic matter in one form or another, whether it's kitchen scraps, whether it's yard waste, other things. Just, you know... I don't have a vermicomposting kit in my home at the moment, but I do have a composter outside.
Wonderful.
And I during the winter, I just throw all the stuff out there, and it freezes, of course. But in the spring, it will thaw, and the decomposition will begin. At least I've got some place to store it, so it's not going into a landfill at the moment. But that gets me back to the question about the red wigglers in the winter. Now, there are various kinds of composters. Now, you can have a composting pile without that's not enclosed. You can have an enclosed that sits on the ground. You can have an enclosed that floats in the air, like the tumblers, those sorts of things. I would assume that red wigglers, if you don't empty your tumbler in the winter, they're done.
I would think so. Yes.
Yeah. They're gonna tie themselves in knots, and it's not gonna do any good at all.
Can you just pull them inside during the winter?
Say
can you just pull your bin inside during the winter?
Well, those bins.
You can. Some people do is they'll compost outside spring, summer, and fall, and then in the fall when they sense the temperature change, the worms will breed more than usual and deposit their eggs throughout. So what some people will do is bring in a pound of worms, or bring in a whole bunch of worms and worm compost inside during the winter.
Yeah, you rescue some, so you carry over to the spring. But one of the things we wondered last week was, okay, let's say your compost pile sits on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that it retains more heat, obviously, than if it's floating in the air. So not everything is going to freeze. Maybe the very center of it doesn't completely freeze.
Right.
Do the wigglers survive in that little area?
Yes, that's right. And as long as the thaw is gradual enough in the spring, the worms will survive. You know, if it's a harsh winter where you have a freeze-thaw, nobody wants to be frozen more than once. Come on.
Yeah.
But the eggs, so the worms may not survive, but the eggs or the cocoons will overwinter.
So the eggs are tough enough to make it through. So how often are red wigglers laying eggs?
You ready? Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready. Should I? I'm sitting
talk
down.
About rabbits and their reproduction. They really have nothing on worms. Worms should be the new producers that we talk about. So it's 3 weeks for the egg to hatch, up to 20 babies in each egg. 5 or 6 is the average. Worms are hermaphrodites, meaning male and female. They both produce a cocoon after they've mated. And then 3 weeks to hatch, 10 weeks to sexual maturity, and then every 7 to 10 days they lay an egg.
Wow. I'm doing the math here.
I know, my head's hurting.
Yeah, I thought my head was hurting from the Dahlia conversation. Now,
big topics.
Can you translate that into numbers over the course of a couple of months or a year or something?
Well, it's a lot. It's funny because, again, I do a lot of worm school workshops, and sometimes the kids will say, well, how many worms can one worm produce in a year? And so I give them the little formula, and I'm still waiting for them to get back to me for the answer.
Oh, so nobody's gotten back. Okay. 773-8. No, let's do a contest here.
Okay,
I'll give away stuff if we can get one of our listeners to do the math for us, because I'm not a math guy. 773-838. That's the only math I can do is the phone number. 773-838-9278. So give us the parameters again of the and this time slowly, so people.
Okay.
So wait. Let me grab. Where's my pen? I've lost my pen here because I want to write this down too.
Don't we have any pens?
All right, here we go.
So imagine five worms, five babies per egg.
Five babies.
Okay.
But up to 20.
Up to 20 eggs? Okay.
Up to 20 babies in each egg.
Oh, wait. Say that again. Five babies per...
Per egg, up to 20. But
five to 20 babies.
Both worms will produce an egg after they've mated.
Okay, so that's two.
That's
you multiply times two.
Okay, 3 weeks to hatch.
3 weeks to hatch, okay.
10 weeks to sexual maturity.
10 weeks to maturity.
And then every 7 to 10 days they produce a cocoon or a worm egg.
All right, every 7 to 10 days.
It's a lot of numbers.
Eggs, okay. Uh-oh, looks like some people are already calling in with the answer. We shall see, and we'll have somebody do the math for us, because we don't know how many worms that is. Now, by the way, I'm talking to Kathy Nesbitt from kathyscomposters.com. It's Kathy with a C. When did you start this business?
We started in 2002, and it happened to just coincide with the same year that the landfill where Toronto put their waste closed. And we have we're similar size to Chicago. I believe Toronto's a bit smaller.
Uh-huh.
We have a lot of condo dwellers. So although we do have an organic collection program, it's geared to householders, which, they have a backyard already. They could compost out back. There's no solution for people that live in apartments or condos currently. Mm-hmm. As far as organic matter goes. So this is a wonderful solution for anybody that lives in a condo, doesn't have a backyard, or an organic collection program.
I'm still trying to figure out why you guys couldn't just dump all your garbage in Hudson Bay. why are you taking it across the river to Michigan?
I don't know. I don't know, but we pay a lot of money for that, just so you know.
I know. Well, I hope Michigan's still hurting it, But all right, we've got a call from Eric in Evanston. Hey, Eric, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, Mike. I'm not trying to get another gift certificate. I have a sincere question.
Oh, you must. He's already won something. Okay, fine. Well, then you're not going to get it. I can guarantee that.
Right. I want to be fair, but. Okay, so when we have red wrigglers working in our outdoor compost bin in warmer temperatures, is it necessary for us to turn the compost, put the pitchfork in there and turn it, or can we just let them do their thing?
Great question. What I would suggest, depending on how big the pile is, if it's just a regular outdoor pile, I would say not. If it's a big, huge, maybe manure pile, you may want to do that, but the worms will do the turning. They would prefer that you not turn.
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought that the whole idea was you've got to get oxygen in there, and the best way to do that is to turn the pile.
That's what the worms do for you, though. That's the beautiful
yeah.
part, is
See,
if you haven't
wondering.
Added worms to your outdoor composter, you can have tons of leisure time. No more turning.
And so, like I have a compost bin that's, you know, a plastic box that's on the ground.
Yes.
And I noticed, you know, when I did put the red worms, for years I've been doing it by hand, you know, with the pitchfork, but this summer I put in red wrigglers, and I noticed when I was turning, it was full of red worms, and I was stabbing them and crushing them and everything.
Yes. Yeah. So stop it. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks for that.
All right. Hey, well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Great. Okay. Thanks again. Great show.
Thanks. Have a good one. Now, we're going to get people to disagree with you.
Of course.
What makes you believe that you don't ever have to turn a compost pile?
Not that you never have to, but if you've added worms in there and you have a nice population of red wigglers,
mm-hmm.
they're doing the turning, they're doing the aerating for you.
Well, I do understand that, but mm-hmm. Even at the edges, don't you want to get some of the outside material into the inside?
Yeah, you could do that. You could absolutely
mm-hmm.
keep turning, but you are going to destroy some of your population.
Hmm.
You're upsetting the environment for the worms, which they've created naturally on their own.
Oh, they're so touchy about that.
I know. Well, all those hearts, remember they have 5 hearts? This is a great, I know it's just after Christmas, but it's a great.
They put a lot of love into that soil.
That's right, they do. Now, here's a question I have for you. You say they won't go into the ground then. They're just going to hang around in where you have material that's decomposing, right?
Correct.
So you can't, that's not one of the ways they're going to try to save themselves, even if a compost pile is on the ground. They're just going to go in the middle of the compost pile, not into the soil.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
What about in the spring? I have started compost piles and did not put red wigglers in there. And then in a while, they're there. Where are they coming from?
Okay, so if you've been gardening and composting and you haven't used chemicals on your property, then you probably
Never.
Have right. Okay, so you probably have a nice organic content in your soil.
Mm-hmm.
So the red wigglers could survive where you do have nice, healthy organic soil, and they'll migrate from one pile to another.
Yeah, but what if there's no compost piles in the neighborhood? I mean, where are they coming from? They must be existing somewhere. Just in the soil or around the soil or is it in leaf matter or what? And
it could be. And then people, you know, you maybe with topsoil or compost that you purchase, there may have been eggs in there or, again, from manure piles.
Mm-hmm. So it's magic is what you're telling me.
It's magic. That's right.
Okay.
Can I ask my mold question?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
Kathy, so I have a friend who does worm composting, so I've been saving my scraps for her in a big plastic bag, unfortunately, in my fridge.
You know, I love that song, Saving My Scraps for You.
Saving my scraps for you. So, anyways, it's been in there so long that it's molding now.
Okay.
Is that, can they not feed molding scraps to worms?
For sure you can, yes.
You can, that's fine.
Now, what
awesome.
I would suggest, composting is always aerobic process, meaning with oxygen. It should never smell like rotting food. So for your friend, before adding those moldy scraps into the compost bin, I would suggest just aerating it a bit, you know, just releasing any of the anaerobic, like just adding some oxygen in there so it doesn't smell too bad.
Just like taking it out of the fridge and letting it sit for...
Yeah, just open up the bag, or if it's in a container, open up the container and let some oxygen get in there.
Mm-hmm.
That will change the bacteria content.
Okay.
What you do is just dump it on your coffee table for a while.
I thought you were going to say dump it into your coffee. I was like,
no, no, dump it on, and then just let it
just
air
brew
out
it.
There. And by the way, we got an email message from Ron Cowgill, and he guessed at the number of.
What do we got?
Worms? No, he.
I don't know if we can say it on the air.
He just said it was a boatload, but that wasn't the word he used, okay?
Okay.
All right.
But
blank load.
What about paper? The kinds of paper. You use paper shreds as bedding for worms in a vermicomposting situation. What are the rules, the do's and don'ts about using paper?
Well, I would suggest staying away from glossy magazine paper. Otherwise, and construction paper because it bleeds a lot of color in. But otherwise, I since I started my business as a waste management tool, I really use a lot of bond paper. I do collect newsprint as well, which is better. I would suggest using a combination of newsprint and bond paper.
What's
bond paper?
Printer paper, photocopy.
Okay.
Paper.
I was going to say, because, yeah, for the scraps that I have, I usually use that paper to take notes, but I could throw it into the compost.
Yeah, but so...
How much, though?
Copy paper. Yeah, that's a good question. And is there a problem with certain kinds of bond paper? I would assume that glossy is not acceptable.
Right. I would stay away from glossy paper. There are chemicals for sure in the paper. Most inks are vegetable or soy-based, so it's not the ink that's the problem. It is the chemicals that would be a problem.
But it doesn't matter that the paper's been bleached?
No. No, it doesn't seem to be... It doesn't affect the worms. They're very hardy or... I don't know. They're very forgiving, I guess, is what I'm looking for the word.
Yeah.
Yeah, the paper doesn't seem to bother them.
That's good.
Yeah.
Are there other things you can use? So a newsprint, because mostly newspapers have gotten away, they've gone to soy-based ink pretty much by and large, with the exception of the color glossy, which you shouldn't, and you shouldn't use it in your yard either, because, some people like to use it as a mulch. Newsprint or paper as a mulch or to suppress weeds and that sort of thing, and basically don't use the color glossy there either.
Right. So it's the same sort of guideline, I guess, for that. You could also use egg cartons, the paper egg cartons, or the drink trays from the coffee shop. Any of those kind of materials. Cardboard is great. Any of those.
But you can't use, I would assume you can't use a coffee cup from... your local, your Starbucks, because it's got other chemicals in it.
It's got the waxy lining or whatever.
Right.
Yes.
And the worms really can't break that down, I assume.
Right. It would just take too long in a small system.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question was how much paper. Well, just like backyard composting, the worms require a carbon-nitrogen mix. So the carbon is the paper, leaves, straw, cardboard, and the nitrogen is the food scraps. Similar question. I mean, people rarely ask about traditionally grown food that has lots of chemicals on it. I think that's a little bit more harmful than the chemicals in the paper, or maybe just as harmful.
Yeah, but how do you know?
Well, you don't know. That's the thing.
I mean, that's the whole idea with the organics, is that you buy local or grow your own, so you know that there haven't been chemicals put on. You get something that's coming from Argentina or Chile or California or Florida. You don't know what's been sprayed on there.
We don't know. That's right.
So
that's why, again, going to growing our own and whatnot, I really believe that composting and worm composting is closing the loop for our food cycle.
All right. Before I let you go and think, yes, I know, I'm going to go to line two. JR, what are you doing back?
You tripped my trigger again, Mike.
Okay.
question. I'm for your worm person here. When you say adding in paper products, corrugated and this type of thing, would you be considering that a waste or a feedstock? I guess it goes back to our question, at least in our state in Illinois, with our government and governing bodies and that type of thing, of that horrible word, and you used it this year already, Mike, is yard waste, which I don't believe exists. There's no such thing as yard waste.
No, that's a really good point, I happen to agree with you there. It's all to be reused. It's a compostable material, yes.
Yes. So I guess my question would be to the worm lady would be to say, if you're adding paper and you're adding this, what is it recognized as? Is that a feedstock? Or is that truly a waste? And she had mentioned that she's running a waste management facility. Well, are you really managing waste, or is it truly just?
Okay, thank you for that. It really, it's about semantics, isn't it? I mean, is it waste? Is it garbage? Is it a resource? It's absolutely a resource, but I call it waste. I call it garbage because that's the term that people call it. So I need to talk to the language that people are using to refer to those products. So yes, it's a feedstock because it's required, but it's also kind of a waste product that would be either be recycled in a blue cart program, which kind of is a waste because the truck still has to stop at every house, So if people can manage their own scraps, that's going to be much more sustainable.
Well,
so, yes,
it is much more sustainable. It's also not going to happen. So,
true.
Way to be optimistic, Mike.
Well, no. Look, hey, we can't even get people to recycle, let alone deal with their organic scraps and that sort of thing. Sure, everybody should have a compost pile, but not everybody has a backyard either.
Yeah. Right.
And not everybody's going to put a worm bin in their kitchen. As you mentioned, Kathy, a lot of townhouses and condos in Toronto, I hope they're doing the right thing, but let's face it, people aren't. And JR, I understand. I mean, and it is a semantics issue.
I guess that's the thing. It's just that if we could, if everybody could work gradually, and I know it's been tagged already, but to get away from this terrible word waste. Hmm. Wasted, and people just think that it's a piece of tar paper or an old tire or something that's going into the landfill. It's not.
Well, I could take it one step further if you want, JR, and say, why is tar paper considered waste? Why can't we figure out what to do with that, and why do we have landfills at all?
You're right, Mike. you're right. I've been in the industry long enough that I know that it's crazy, and that, now there's the movements where we're gonna dig up the old landfill and actually, figure out what they did wrong 25, 30, 50 years ago, and we're gonna take everything back out.
Well, that might not be a bad thing. We're gonna, like you said, find out what we did wrong, discover a lot of things. We're gonna discover what didn't break down, which is probably most of the stuff in there, especially in anaerobic conditions. This is all, I mean, you brought up a really good point, JR, which is that we have to start thinking about these in different ways and use different terms. But as Kathy points out, she's not going to be successful unless she deals in the language of her business. And if you start being contrary just to make a point, you're not going to be in business very long.
Correct.
It's like I say, it's a frustrating thing, but I'm glad to hear what you're doing with the alternative organics, Cass.
Thank you.
All right. Now, JR, calm down, all right? Decaf for you rest of the morning, all right?
All right.
All right.
Enjoy.
Thanks for calling again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Kathy, it's actually a great segue into our next segment, so I'm going to let you go. And we got a tweet from Cope Dog, who says he uses primarily corrugated cardboard, shredded pine sawdust, and coarse burlap. Burlap, I hadn't thought about that, for bedding in his worm bin.
Beautiful.
And you don't have a problem with any of those.
I think whatever anybody has available, be it food scraps or coffee ground for a coffee shop, same with coffee chaff if somebody's a green roaster. Those are all wonderful things. Whatever you've got available, the worms will adapt.
He also asks whether you've heard of pot worms, which are tiny white worms. They're called maggots.
No, I'm
kidding.
They're called intricates. They're small white worms, which are also decomposers. They show up when the worm bin is too wet.
He says they're supposed to be great in potted plants, but he can't find them. Do you have any idea where you can track these down?
They sort of just arrive in the worm bin. They just arrive
really?
Naturally. Yes.
See, it's like it's more magic. I keep
so
asking
you have to pray for them.
Where the worms? What?
You have to pray for them.
Then they show. The worms just if you throw it, they will come.
If you stick it, they will come.
Whatever.
If you
shred it, they will come. Before I let you go, what do you got coming up with your business?
Just in a quick sentence, I'm creating an enterprise that will be operated by challenge people. We're going to divert scraps from restaurants, paper waste from, sorry, JR. Paper waste from businesses.
It's okay. You're allowed to say it. Don't let JR get on your case. All right?
And then convert it at a central location, turn it into compost, start a community garden, reduce people's meds, and have healthier, happier people.
Reduce people's meds?
Meds, that's what she said.
Medications.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Meds, yeah.
Yeah, Leah's ears perked up when she heard that. How do I get off my meds here?
Worms.
Yeah, worms. And it's all about worms, folks.
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Well, Kathy, it's wonderful, and I hope people go to your website, kathyscomposters.com. Sometime after the show, I'll go back to my website so that the name of your company and the website are both up on this week's show, so that folks who want to do that can log on. And you sell products, composting products, including worm kits for vermicomposting indoors, correct?
Yes, I do, and I even have a documentary called Squirm.
It's a documentary.
If you ever want to have a segment on worm composting again, feel free to call me.
Can you watch it online? How do you watch it?
The trailer's online. Otherwise, you have to buy it.
All right. Cool. So if you want to see Squirm, go to Kathy. if you want to squirm, I know. All right, I got to let you go. We're going to get in trouble here.
Thanks, Kathy.
Kathy, it's great talking to you. You take care now.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Woo!
E-dog.
E-doggies. Well, actually, yeah, it is a good lead-in to that whole question of, you know, what's garbage and what's not. If you have, I tell you what, if you've got questions you think, and they're environmental questions. because people, I'm going to talk about the mayoral race, and everybody's got questions like, you know, how are you going to raise money and how are you going to fix the schools? And environmental is what I'm interested in. 773-838. Well, it's part of the answer. 773-838-9278. Give us a call because I'd be interested, especially if you live in the city of Chicago, what you would want to ask a new candidate or ask the candidates who are left in the race about environmental questions for the city of Chicago. Now, on the second day of the new year, which is today, many gardeners are already planning this year's garden. Hey, we talked to Dan and Frank earlier. Don't ask me why. Gardeners are like that. But in Zone 5, where most of us are located, gardeners start reading and planning, which means they should get their hands on Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is out, and it's the annual Garden Planning Edition, complete with 3 holes punched in the side so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. There are articles about what to do when in the edible garden, a guide to color throughout the growing year, and a look at some of the best new flower varieties. Of course, there are all of the regional reports from around the area, experts to answer your gardening questions, and even my column on the inside back page. Some people like to cut it out and paste it on their refrigerators. Some people just like to cut it out. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, and don't forget there's the article about the dahlias, too. And Dan and Frank are quoted, and there's the how-to. There's a photo essay on that, too, on how to do those cuttings that we talked about earlier in the show. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you got a real tree this year, talking about landfills, don't let it end up in a landfill. It's easy to recycle or reuse. The branches of a Christmas tree can be chipped or shredded and used as mulch in the yard or placed in the compost pile. Obviously, the finer you chop it up, the faster it will decompose in the spring. Of course, if you don't want to chop it up yourself, your city will probably do it for you. I wish somebody, and I'm not the guy because I don't have the resources, but you know, if you go online, you can find out where to recycle trees in the city of Chicago. And you just go to cityofchicago.org/environment, and the information's there. I wish somebody would do a comprehensive list of all the municipalities in the area that compost trees and put it all in one place. I get Google alerts on environment and things like that, and I try to find these things I've never seen a comprehensive list, but I could be wrong. Maybe somebody's got that information for me. Now, branches from the tree can be used to cover plants to help protect them from the cold and wind and to keep the soil temperature even. Finally, never burn your Christmas tree or any fresh conifer wood in a fireplace or wood stove. The trees have a lot of sap, which when burned turns into creosote that can coat the inside of your chimney and possibly lead to a chimney fire. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Lee, I didn't know you played the banjo.
I'm getting so good.
I know, you really are. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. As I mentioned earlier, did you know there's an election coming up in Chicago?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's cool.
For so, what?
I don't know. There's something going on. And as a matter of fact...
Richard M. Richard J.'s dad, whoops. Maybe he'll come back.
I thought maybe you just like dad better. I thought maybe that was a story.
Those were the days.
Let's go to line two and bring in Elaine. How you doing, Elaine? You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Oh, I'm doing okay. Thank you.
Do you live in Chicago?
I do.
And you've got a question for our new mayor, whoever that might be.
Yes, this is one of my big bugaboos. Not just me. It's those light bulbs, the fluorescent light bulbs that contain mercury.
Yeah.
And it just makes me angry because if I could just quote a fact, 1 in 6 children today are born with high mercury levels, high enough to cause neurodevelopmental disabilities. So wow. That we are adding mercury to our environment just makes me furious. And my son has Asperger's. A form of autism, which may have been caused by mercury. So, I don't know if I just said that. They want to make all light bulbs fluorescent in 2014, and it makes me so angry because we know people are just going to toss them out in the garbage. People are not going to responsibly recycle mercury light bulbs.
Well, most people don't responsibly recycle, which is a fact already. And you're talking about the compact fluorescence, right? But what was the thing about 2014?
Oh, well, it was in the Chicago Tribune. It's Thursday, December 30th on commentary page. Looks like 19. Don't You Hate Those Bulbs by Linda Case. And she said that by 2014, the government wants, to discontinue all light bulbs except the fluorescents.
The incandescents they want to discontinue.
Yes.
Now, I don't see that they would go to all compact fluorescents because that's already a technology that is behind LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we be putting our eggs in that basket? That doesn't seem to make any sense.
You know, I don't know. She didn't address that in the article.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, could you do me a favor and send me that article? Or are you tracking that down, Leah? Do you think you can find that?
I will try.
Heather would have found it already.
Heather, did you hear that?
Give me the author again. And where was it?
It's the Chicago Tribune, December 30th,
okay.
Page 19. The article's called Don't You Hate Those Bulbs by Linda Case, just C-A-S-E.
C-A-S-E. Okay, great. We should be able to track that down.
Linda?
Yeah.
Linda Case.
Yeah. And you're right about it. We put mercury in there. But not only that, we have two coal-fired plants in the city of Chicago, Fisk and Crawford, and they release mercury when they burn coal. So, we're surrounded by it. Did you find the article?
Yes, I did.
Okay, let's take a look at this. Scroll that back up. She writes, Linda Case, went to my old pizza place the other night, have been going there for 20 years, blah, blah, blah. The minute I stepped in, I knew something was off. In an attempt to save money and be good to citizens, the owners had removed the mellow incandescent bulbs and fixtures overhead, and they replaced them with the CFL variety. Compact fluorescent lights are the coiled bulbs that, which he writes here, and that Stephen Colbert says look like soft serve ice cream. And the restaurant was different. A strange greenish feeling prevailed. Gone was the coziness. Well, she's, of course, the incandescents were very warm. Let's see here. The federal government has mandated that incandescent bulbs will no longer be sold in this country after 2014 unless they meet impossible efficiency standards. In other words, everyone will be required to use the newer models. Manufacturers claim they have made the product softer, but the CFLs still do not compare to the warmth of Edison's classic invention.
They really don't.
And she writes, the whole deal smacks of government by fiat. The state decrees, let there be this light only. It takes no account of issues such as beauty, mellowness, caprice, mood. Well, you know, she doesn't even bring up the whole idea of mercury.
She gets there later.
Oh, does she? Okay, so we got to scroll down. Let's see. Let's go to the next page here.
It's all a two-pager.
Uh-huh. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Keep going down. All right. The new bulbs contain the toxic substance mercury. They are hard to dispose of safely. Also, the best way they cast light is said to spur migraines and seizures for some people. I had not heard that. Wow. Very interesting. So, and Linda Case is a freelance writer from Weathersfield, Connecticut, and the Tribune picked up on her rant. Very interesting. I'm going to do a little more about that. And yes, you know, you can recycle them, but you have to take them to the right place. It's not a matter of throwing them away. You don't want to drop one. And the old fluorescents, I think, are even worse. I'm glad you brought this to my attention, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
That'd be a good question for a mayor, is to ask what you're going to do about that sort of toxic material.
And bulb recycling, I mean, what are we asking? What are we looking for?
Well, we're looking for a safer way to live.
I'm joking about online. Do you want me to pull something up?
What's that?
Could I ask you a question?
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know anything about LED lights. I'm afraid of them. Are they safe?
Which lights? I'm sorry?
The LED lights or LED?
LED. No, that's, as far as I know, you know, they're certainly more efficient. It's what more and more people are switching to. They use a lot less power. I don't believe, you know, I'd have to check what the environmental drawbacks are of the LEDs. But that is, you know, the next generation of light. The problem is they're expensive right now, and a lot of people don't want to switch. People don't want to switch over from incandescents to compact fluorescents because they feel like they're paying more. But this is the next generation, which looks like at some point will phase out the compact fluorescents. You know what? That's a conversation to have on the show. So you weren't familiar. I mean, the Christmas lights, Elaine, have gone to LEDs. That's that newer kind of light that you see on Christmas lights.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They call them LEDs, but there are indoor uses for them, and they last a lot longer than even compact fluorescents. The problem is, for a bulb that you're going to put in your kitchen, it's practically $40 or something like that. You know, $30 or $40, and it's, you know, who's going to do that, even though it's going to last forever? People think short term. They don't think long term. But that may be the answer.
I hope they develop better lighting.
That's a big commitment, $40 a bulb.
It is. It is. Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, thanks for the call. I want to get to another call, and I appreciate you paying attention. And and caring about the environment and listening to the show.
Thanks for the article.
Oh, sure. You're welcome.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Let us go to line two. Richard, is this you again?
Different Richard.
Oh, different Richard. Okay.
How are you, Mike?
I'm fine. How are you, Richard?
I'm partly cloudy.
And you had a question or a comment about landfills?
Actually, it turns out I thought I only had one comment, but I now have to add something.
Cause okay, go ahead.
My friend Pavel just stepped into the car with me, and he said, we have now three Commonwealth Edison coal-burning plants around Chicago.
Well, around Chicago. I'm talking about in the city of Chicago. There are the two. Yes, and there's one just over the state line in Indiana.
Okay, and then the other comment that he made is that they're doing what I'm about to ask the question already in Europe, and I didn't know that until he got in the car. And the question is, why can't we be mining landfills? There must be billions and billions of pounds of stuff that they've thrown into landfills all over the country that could be recycled. And if we can go to the moon, and if we can go find the Titanic and get under sea, we've got to be able to develop a technology that will keep people safe that can mine these landfills. Go back into these all these old landfills and start mining them. It's got to be gold.
Well, the first thing I would say about that, there's a couple of things I'd say. First, yes, I would think that there's a lot of stuff that can be reused in landfills. Second, there's a lot of toxic stuff in landfills. It would be an extremely hazardous job. And you talk about, and by the way, last week I did some of the news stories that I missed during the year, and there were two that relate to our conversation right here. One was that the world's first 60-watt LED bulb was unveiled this past spring by Philips, and there's a link to it there if you go to past shows and go to December 26th. The other was something that you just alluded to, which is about... Oh, did I do this? I hope I put it in there. About... Maybe I didn't. Oh, because I saw it recently. There's some guy has figured out how to way to turn plastic into oil. So take the oil that's made into plastic, and he's a Japanese researcher. It doesn't surprise me.
May I interrupt?
Yeah.
They've been recycling plastic in cars in these landfills and turning them into biofuel for 2-3 years already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this guy was doing it on a tabletop. Basically, you know, it's like you take the stuff you throw away, you put it into this thing, and bam, you're reproducing oil, which is, you know, this is the way we've got to be thinking and being smarter about things. So,
all I know is that if Pavel tells me they're already doing this in Europe, in Poland and places around the Eastern Europe and Europe, we ought to be doing it here. And you know, I understand about the toxicity point that you're making, but you know, we've got to be able to develop some kind of machines that protect people that can still go in there and get all this gold, because that's what it's as good as. It's all this stuff is as good as gold that are in all these landfills, and we could probably leave nothing in the landfills when we're all done, or almost nothing.
Well, you know, if we weren't beholden to the oil companies, that would probably help us do that, because you know, it's sometimes we just got to smack our politicians around a little bit and get them to understand that we have to develop new technology. And if you read anything about China recently, they're the people who are becoming the green country, and we're going to get left into the dust. And that's...
I don't need much of a reason to smack my politicians around.
Okay. On that note, I'm going to let you go, Richard. Thank you for calling. I really appreciate it.
All right,
take care. Now that Christmas and New Year's have come and gone, it's time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those all-important indoor gardening tasks you've neglected. By the way, Carl, hang on, I'm going to be with you in a second. Such as repotting the unruly houseplants that were temporarily shoved behind the bookcase when you made room for the Christmas tree. Sid's Greenhouses can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant, and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. Of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. Remember, houseplants not only look great, they also help improve indoor air quality. If you've been enjoying a lovely Ponzetta for the last several weeks, you're in luck. You think that's funny, don't you, Leah? Now through February 1st, you can trade in your Ponzetta plant at SIDS and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. Oh, and just in case you're already working on this year's Christmas, most remaining Christmas merchandise is 60 to 75% off while supplies last. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Speaking of Ron Cowgill, who runs DR Services, and they're a great outfit if you're looking for somebody to do work on your home. He texted me a second ago. He says there is more mercury put in the air from burning coal to power one regular bulb than there is in the CFL. Yeah. Well, again, using coal powers is not a good thing. And while we're on that subject, let's go to line three. It's going to be the last word. And before I talk to you, Carl, and you're going to have to be quick, I never got to the questions, but they're on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. You can look at some of the questions that are going to be asked by a coalition of environmental groups that got together to speak to the mayoral candidates. The Environmental Law and Policy Center helped put these questions together. I've got 10 of them up on there, including solid waste recycling, Fisk and Crawford coal plants, climate change solutions, conserving water, disinfecting the Chicago River, increased funding for CTA, neighborhood parks, local food, and more. All right, Carl, you're going to have the last word. How you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
All right.
One of the things that I had done some research, I was doing a project for a school for special needs, and one of the concerns was that the fluorescence in the CFL would cause a problem. And we found out that the CFL runs at a different frequency, which does not cause the same effects that a regular fluorescent bulb does. And the other thing is that the newer, there was an article, I think it was in Popular Science, that CFLs, they're substituting the mercury with some other product that does not cause the pollution effect.
So they're backing off on the mercury in the CFLs,
right,
in the later models.
And
that's good.
All the LED lights, everything that's within the LED is a total recyclable. When the LED light goes bad, which is like 40 years from now, everything that's in it can be recycled and remade again.
All right. That's great advice. Thanks for calling, Carl. That's all the time we have today. And thank you, Leah, for filling in for Heather. And at this point, what we say is go green or go home. You don't even know.